as the country. My name is Justin Weller, and I'm the host of the country. Thank you for joining us. This is our presidential Republican primary debate recap special. We're recording this on Thursday, August 21st, 2023. And as always, you can find us at JW The Country on Twitter and at www.thecountry.news. That's our website. So, what a night last night. It was really entertaining to watch. There were a bunch of surprises. We're going to take you through the highlights here and hopefully get you a quick recap in case you didn't watch it, or maybe some Monday morning quarterbacking, even if you did. So really appreciate you joining us here and anxious to get started. Before we actually get into, you know, replaying some of the clips and talking a little bit about what happened, I do want to sort of share what I think are the key takeaways from this debate. And the first is I want to spend a moment on the coverage. I was extremely disappointed, frustrated with the way that Fox News handled that debate for a couple reasons. I felt like it was much too much about Fox News and about the hosts. You know, they started it with a package that was unnecessary, that was overdubbed by Brit Hume. Then there was, you know, sort of the introduction by Brett and Martha that was sort of, you know, a little kludgy, a little bumpy. And then they spent time like running packages before they ask a question. And quite frankly, Fox News, Brett, Martha, I know it's a hard job, like having eight, you know, alpha male and female politicians on the stage is quite a challenge, I'm sure. But not only was it too much about Fox, it was too much about Fox News. I don't care to see your packages. I don't care what your editorial producers put together to try and make it interactive. I just want you to ask questions of the candidates and focus on them and not you. And I felt like, Fox News was way too involved in this debate from that perspective. The other thing that sort of, that goes along with that is that, you know, both the hosts spent a good amount of time sort of editorializing what's happening. Like sort of, oh, yeah, we'll get to you. What we're going to do is this. What we're going to do is that. I can't tell you how many times Bret Baier said, there are many important topics to get to, you know, and things like that. And they'd interact with the debaters and say, yeah, you know, we're going to get to that. This is when it's happening, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like there was a lot of sort of crosstalk about what's happening in terms of the structure of the questions and who would get time and that sort of thing. And I don't care. I don't care to hear that. Nobody needs to hear it. You're in control of the debate. You are the referee. These debaters, for the purposes of this show, are not your friends. And so you don't need to spend time explaining to them what's happening, as long as you're playing it straight and giving everybody a decent shot to participate. And so from that perspective, I found the coverage and the hosting, I wouldn't say poor, but just, you know, average to below average. I would really appreciate it if next time Fox News goes right to questions within the first 2 minutes of the debate, spends all their time allowing the candidates to participate. And then finally, the other thing that was really frustrating is the stupid doorbell goes off and they let people talk for another minute or 2 minutes. They did not have control over the time. And so, you know, people like Mike Pence and Nikki Haley and some others just spoke for, you know, 3 or 4 minutes at a time, regardless of the rules. And so I felt like that was really weak. All right. So enough inside baseball. The next thing I want to say is, you know, I was surprised by a number of things. And I did write a blog post yesterday, sort of what I thought folks should need to do in this debate. And I think there were some serious surprises. The first is nobody attacked Ron DeSantis. And, you know, if you listen to all the pre-debate coverage, that's what was going to happen. Attack number two, and maybe you can move up in the polls, sort of thing. But if you watched, nobody attacked Ron DeSantis, really. And if they tried to, they didn't land anything. But Chris Christie, Nikki Haley, and especially Mike Pence, especially those two, went after Vivek Ramaswamy hard. And you know what's interesting about that is if you had to pick out of the eight folks, the people that were the most establishment, most, you know, blue blood, donor class, GOP darlings, you'd pick Chris Christie, Mike Pence, and Nikki Haley, which is really interesting if you think about it. They see more threat from Vivek than Ron DeSantis. Or perhaps they're just trying to get to number three at this point. But, you know, most of the debate, most of the big moments were Vivek fending off criticism from those folks. I think his name is actually Vivek is the way that I hear it pronounced. So I apologize, Mr. Ramaswamy, if I get your first name wrong. Why don't you come on the show and we can talk about it? Ha, 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 like that's likely. All right, so yeah, so I was really surprised that nobody attacked Ron DeSantis, and most of the attacks went at Vivek and, of course, Joe Biden. And I was watching some coverage on MSNBC later, and they were really surprised and sort of honing in on how, you know, almost every candidate talked about how bad things are in America, you know. The first words said by a candidate in the debate, as Rachel Maddow pointed out, were by Ron DeSantis, America is in decline. And I think, you know, I certainly think and see those signs and why that would resonate with especially the Republican current electorate. So, you know, I think it's a smart move to you know, talk to those interests and needs. At the same time, it opens up, and you heard Mike Pence sort of say, you know, do the we love, you know, America is the greatest country on the face of the earth kind of shtick to respond to that, which, you know, in the past was likely a very strong argument for a presidential candidate. We live in interesting times, though, and it will be interesting to see if this message of we're on the wrong track, we're in decline, but we can fix it, resonates and moves through with the American people as we move through this presidential race, and whether it doesn't. So at the end of the day, you know, my initial analysis, and we'll get into it further, is let's look at the candidates in order, right? So Ron DeSantis, you know, he did pretty well. He did okay. He didn't make any mistakes. He had a couple good moments. I really did love when they asked one of those show of hands questions, and he immediately pushed back and said, "We're not school children. Let me answer the question." And I think that's kind of what was missing from him, and maybe why, perhaps why many people didn't attack him, is I think he's best when he's sort of bulldogging against folks, you know, responding and sort of getting into it. I think that's where he finds his passion. And so, you know, there wasn't very much of that. And, you know, obviously it's clear, everyone could see it. He's not a traditional, you know, charming politician. The reason to vote for Ron DeSantis is his record and his record of governing in a great way. He is no Obama. He's not even a Trump in terms of charisma. He's not going to win your vote based on a pretty speech and, wow, I like that guy. And honestly, it's sort of a, you know, it's sort of a Nixon sort of candidacy, and not to tie him to, you know, Watergate or anything like that. But that was what Nixon was like, is people thought he was competent. People thought he could, you know, in the 60s, thought he could run, you know, had a ton of experience, could run a great government, but nobody liked him, right, personally. So DeSantis is, I don't think he's going to change that. And I don't think there's any good reason to have him do that. It's just going to fail because it's not him. All right. So he did okay. He didn't break through. He certainly didn't have a moment where it's like, okay, now he can challenge Donald Trump for the nomination. So, you know, I think it's a missed opportunity from that perspective. But we'll see if, you know, folks hadn't heard from him before maybe caught it and are more interested in his candidacy. Number two, Vivek. We already talked a little bit about him, but here's the thing, and I wrote about this yesterday on the blog at thecountry.news, www.thecountry.news. You know, I'm just worried that he's a con man, that he's a snake oil salesman, that he is Harold Hill from The Music Man, you know? We need, or the guy, you know, when they did the spoof on The Simpsons, the monorail guy. Monorail, right? Like, I just, you know, if you watch him, especially in the beginning, he looked really nervous with this big smile. Some people may have thought that was a shit-eating grin, but to me, it just looked disingenuous and sort of, you know, sleazy, I guess is the best word for it. And so, you know, I think maybe people are going to start to pick up on that. And his background, when they start to look at it, they'll realize he is a get-rich-quick kind of guy. He's, you know, was a hedge fund partner, and then he started a pharmaceutical company that he made hundreds of millions of dollars. But, you know, from my short research, they never delivered a product that helped anybody. And so, you know, I think people are going to start to peel back that onion and look into that. And then after that, he started Strive, like a mutual fund company, an anti-ESG sort of way to invest, which, you know, I think is cool on its face, but, you know, just another jump to another get-rich-quick scheme. So I am concerned that, you know, based upon his youth and inexperience, he really, you know, maybe he isn't all that he's able to communicate. And don't get me wrong, he's a wonderful communicator. He is the opposite of Ron DeSantis, right? If you took Ron DeSantis and Vivek Ramaswamy and put them into one candidate, man, you know, they could probably win 3 terms as president, right? So I am concerned that, you know, it's all hat and no cattle with Vivek. And, you know, so he kind of, you know, in the beginning for me, looked very much like that, like you know, a lot of fluff with no substance. And then for me, the other two folks that I think did really well for themselves, and I think it's now a 4-person race for number 2 right now. Right. So 5 people, including Trump, but 4 from that debate stage. So it's DeSantis and Ramaswamy. And then the 2 people that I felt did sort of the next best were Mike Pence and Nikki Haley. And I have to admit to you, I was, maybe it's because of my handicapping of Mike Pence, I wrote him off completely. I think I wrote 1 sentence yesterday, you know, uninspiring, inside the beltway kind of, you know, hack. And I had forgotten at how well he delivers a message. He sounds presidential when he speaks. He actually almost sounds like a Southern preacher, not one of the wild sort of Southern Baptists, like get out and, you know, talk in tongues and that sort of thing, but just a, you know, a solid conservative preacher from the South is what he sounds like, even though he's from Indiana. But so he presents very well. He certainly has a good command of the material and knows where he is and what he wants to focus on. And so from that perspective, I think he did much better than I expected. He also focused most of his ire on Vivek and I think scored some points with him. There was a moment, and it kind of got stepped on by the crowd. That's the other thing. The crowd was out of control and the hosts were unable to control them. In fact, about halfway through, I was like, I wish there was no crowd in this debate, right? Like it would be, I would get so much more information if there weren't these yahoos screaming all the time, you know? And it's clear that like each campaign brings in their people. Hey, don't forget to yell and scream when my name comes up, when I talk, right? Like, so, you know, from that sense, the sort of cheerleader, you know, pep rally sort of thing really annoys me. I wish they would just get rid of the audience or have a very small audience that would be more respectful. So, yeah. So Pence, I thought, did very well. Again, I think it's maybe because of the way that I expected him to be a non-issue. I think he should move into 5th place in the polling pretty soon here. And you know, we'll see what happens. And then Nikki Haley, you know, I had written she needed a Tulsi Gabbard in 2016 or Kamala Harris in 2020 moment. She had it. She really was put together. She had a great message. She tore up Vivek with that you have no foreign policy and it shows. And I was really surprised that, you know, the way she was able to attack and still not seem mean or, you know, that sort of thing. Like she stayed, what, for lack of a better term, presidential, while also attacking and scoring points. So she also took a very centrist view to things like abortion, which I think is really smart. The Republicans continue to get destroyed by the Dobbs decision in the Supreme Court, which, you know, overturned Roe v. Wade and sent it back to the states. There was a lot of discussion of that. And I think her sort of view that, look, we can't get a national abortion bill through anyway because there's not, there hasn't been 60 senators that would vote for that, you know, in 100 years. And so it really doesn't matter. And we need to focus on the women and stop demonizing them. And it was a really good message. She somehow did that while also saying, look, I'm pro-life and I believe in it. It was a very nuanced position that I think is really smart for the Republicans to think about. Because, again, everything points in their direction, right? The economy's terrible. Inflation's terrible. Our foreign policy is a joke. We're spending time in forever wars. We have a president who, quite frankly, is clearly cognitively many times inept and who is on vacation all the time. And, you know, there's no reason why the Republicans shouldn't sweep through the next election except for Roe v. Wade and except for Dobbs. And so they've got to figure that out. And she sort of, I think, led the way there. So those are my top four from the debate. Chris Christie was okay. The ChatGPT line for Vivek was okay. But, you know, that's my take there is Ron DeSantis did okay. Vivek probably is the first time many people saw him. They probably liked him. But for me, again, it was sort of not his best moment. I've seen him much better in one-on-one interviews. And I think Mike Pence and Nikki Haley are going to be the establishment candidates, going forward, you know, that may be able to make some noise here. I don't think the Republican electorate is going to elect anybody from the establishment like that, but from that wing of the party, they're now the leaders. All right. So that's where, sort of the, summary from my perspective of what happened last night. And now we're going to move into getting into the actual questions and play you some things and comment as we see fit. So I think it's important to start with Ron DeSantis. He is in second place and was in the number one position there. So let's hear what his first answer to the first question to him sounded like.
Why is this song striking such a nerve in this country right now? What do you think it means?
Our country is in decline. This decline is not inevitable. It's a choice. We need to send Joe Biden back to his basement and reverse American decline. And it starts.
That's a good applause line.
We must reverse Bidenomics so that middle class families have a chance to succeed again. We cannot succeed as a country if you are working hard and you can't afford groceries, a car, or a new home, while Hunter Biden can make hundreds of thousands of dollars on lousy paintings. That is wrong. We also cannot succeed when the Congress spends trillions and trillions of dollars. Those rich men north of Richmond have put us in this situation. And finally, we need to lower your gas prices. We're going to open up all energy production. We will be energy dominant again in this country. I showed it could be done in the state of Florida. I pledge to you as your president, we will get the job done and I will not let you down.
So there was some good one-liners in there, including, you know, comparing what you're making to what Hunter Biden's making on his paintings. He hit on energy independence and opening up the spigots at the gas pumps and the coal mines and all those sorts of things. And it's interesting that I will not let you down. I think he says that a couple times. I wonder if they're testing that out. And maybe that's the future attack on Trump, right? He let us down. You know, he made a bunch of promises and did some great things, but then look at the lockdowns and look at COVID and look at, you know, the indictments around January 6th and all those things. He let us down as a leader, and I won't. You know, maybe that's where he's going. Otherwise, I'm not sure what the point of it is. Okay, so the next question, the second question in the debate, I was quite surprised. And I'm sure that Vivek and Mike Pence and Nikki Haley were as well, because they're leading him in the polls. But the second question went to Chris Christie. And so that was very surprising. I almost think he was surprised as well, as, you know, I'm not sure this answer was great. And I think that maybe the debate hosts, you know, Brett or Martha, thought that Chris Christie would immediately go after Ron or maybe even Trump. And I'm real surprised by this response. Listen here.
Governor Christie, do you agree with Governor DeSantis just said there? And why would you be better on the economy than him?
Well, look, I do agree predominantly with what Governor DeSantis just laid out. I think that if you asked every one of us up here, that we would agree predominantly with what he just laid out. Here's the difference. The difference is that we're going to have to work and make sure that we sell these ideas and we be able to put ourselves in a position where we get a majority of the vote, not only by winning the Congress and the Senate in 24, but also by having someone who's had the experience of doing it. Now, I was elected as a conservative Republican in a blue state with 61% of the vote, with a Democratic legislature against me the entire time. And we still, through hard, strong decision making, brought them around to our point of view. We cut taxes in New Jersey. We cut debt in New Jersey. We made sure that each and every time we were confronted with bad Democratic ideas, we stood and stopped them. And when there were good ideas, we brought people together to make progress going forward.
So that's not his whole answer, but you get the gist. And, you know, again, I was really surprised that his opening statement was like a resume answer. You know, here's what I did in New Jersey. Nobody cares. And, you know, his point in the question was, hey, Ron DeSantis said everything that we all agree with, but, you know, I've got the experience. What? I don't see how Chris Christie wins a debate where he was a better governor than Ron DeSantis has been. Like, it's just a silly argument. It works against Vivek or, you know, maybe some others who don't have an experience, but it's a really strange place to go. You know, and he hasn't been a governor for, what, 10 years? You know, so nobody cares what he did in New Jersey. I just don't get it. Why did he not take the opportunity right there, first off, to go after Trump? That's, you know, that's the whole point of his candidacy as I understand it. And it was just a non, you know, answer, just a, you know, coloring within the lines, connecting the dots on a basic debate answer. And then even more surprisingly, Brett Baer asked him a follow-up question and, you know, on his record in New Jersey. So, you know, here we are 8 minutes into the debate and we're talking about Chris Christie's record in New Jersey in 2012. Like, what is the point there? So, yeah, I think we were way off the rails there in the beginning, both because of the hosts and the questions and the orders and Chris Christie. I think they were hoping for him to start the fireworks early, and he wasn't up for it. Okay, so then there was that interchange between Christie and Brett Baer around his record in New Jersey. And then, strangely enough, again, the next question went to Tim Scott. He's polling at like 2%. Why does he get the third question? I don't understand this debate prep. And, you know, the question was about what has he done to rein in spending in Congress over his 10-year career as a senator. And, you know, he didn't really have an answer. He had a Washington, D.C., I voted for this or tried to get that. You know, it's really not a fair question for a senator because they don't have enough power to make something like that happen. If I was him, I would have flipped it into what I'm going to do. But, you know, quite honestly, he didn't have a great answer or a great night, so we're going to skip that. So, interestingly enough, the next question goes to Ramaswamy, and I'd missed this. Mike Pence tried to jump in right there because he wanted to respond to Tim Scott's answer because Senator Scott was talking about the record of the Trump administration. And Mike Pence was like, I want to respond. And Brett Baer was like, no, he didn't mention you personally. And he goes right back to Vivek. And so Let's go ahead and play some of that. This is pretty interesting.
Listening to all of this, why should voters choose you over more experienced politicians on this stage? You're basically, you know, a blank slate for people. You're 38 years old. You've said that you only voted in two presidential elections before this moment, this political race.
So first, let me just address a question that is on everybody's mind at home tonight. Who the heck is this skinny guy with a funny last name, and what the heck is he doing in the middle of this debate stage? I'll tell you, I'm not a politician, Brett. You're right about that. I'm an entrepreneur. My parents came to this country with no money 40 years ago. I have gone on to found multi-billion dollar companies. I did it while marrying my wife, Apoorva, raising our two sons, following our faith in God. That is the American dream. And I am genuinely worried that that American dream will not exist for our two sons and their generation unless we do something about it. And I do think Brett is going to take an outsider, because for a long time we have professional politicians in the Republican Party who have been running from something. Now is our moment to start running to something, to our vision of what it means to be an American today. If you have a broken car, you don't turn over the keys to the people who broke it again. You hand it over to a new generation to actually fix the problem. That's why I'm in this race, and we're just getting warmed up.
So it's interesting. Be interested to hear in the comments, or, you know, shoot me a note at thecountryusa@gmail.com. What do you think about that, just listening to it? Because, and maybe we need to start doing this podcast with video. I need to figure that out. But, you know, if you watch him, that's where I really get the, you know, infomercial kind of vibe. And, you know, a big cheesy smile and ha 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 ha. And, you know, obviously he's super well spoken. He's a great communicator. He's extremely smart. And I think that was a good answer. Definitely the answer you have to give. Look, you know, if you want somebody with experience, you know, there's a bunch of people here. And guess what? They've been running this country for years. You happy or you need change? And so he's going to be the change candidate. He can eat up that experience question, and he's obviously got that piece of it down. So well done.
To you, Governor Haley. So why are you better positioned to turn around this economy that we've heard all of these voters talking about tonight than Mr. Ramaswamy, who is a successful entrepreneur nationally right now? He's beating you in the polls.
Well, I don't care about polls. What I care about, the fact is that no one is telling the American people the truth. The truth is that Biden didn't do this to us. Our Republicans did this to us, too. When they passed that $2.2 trillion COVID stimulus bill, they left us with 90 million people on Medicaid, 42 million people on food stamps. No one has told you how to fix it. I'll tell you how to fix it. They need to stop the spending. They need to stop the borrowing. They need to eliminate the earmarks that the Republicans brought back in. And they need to make sure they understand these are taxpayer dollars. It's not their dollars. And while they're all saying this, you have Ron DeSantis, you've got Tim Scott, you've got Mike Pence. They all voted to raise the debt. And Donald Trump added $8 trillion to our debt, and our kids are never going to forgive us for this. And so at the end of the day, you look at the 2024 budget, Republicans asked for $7.4 billion in earmarks, Democrats asked for $2.8 billion. So you tell me who are the big spenders. I think it's time for an accountant in the White House.
Vice President Pence.
Man, that was a good answer. You know, I am, like I said at the top, I'm really pleasantly surprised at Nikki's performance here. It's really smart, too. You're low in the polls. You've got to, you know, you got to break out of the box. You got to be different in some way. So, like, I'm going to tell the truth, even though these guys aren't. It's not just Democrats that are spending all your money. It's some of these guys on stage, too. Specifically called out Ron DeSantis, Tim Scott, and Mike Pence for voting for debt limit increases. And talked about earmarks. So, I mean, earmarks isn't going to get us to the promised land in terms of balancing the budget. But again, it's a good tack. It's, you know, sort of calling out your own. So I think from an independence point of view, maybe from a, you know, hey, she's different point of view, maybe she gets some points for that. But I thought it was a really smart answer. And she, you know, she's carrying herself very well.
Is a, quote, major problem for them. Right. You blame the Biden administration spending for that increase. But as vice president, your administration spent more than any prior, $7.8 trillion added to the national debt, $3.5 trillion of that before COVID. So does that mean that you're part of the spending problem?
Well, first off, thanks for the question. Thanks for letting me respond to a reference to our administration's record. I'm incredibly proud of the record of the Trump-Pence administration. I mean, in 4 short years, we rebuilt our military. We revived our economy. We unleashed American energy. And we appointed 3 conservatives to the Supreme Court that gave the American people a new beginning for the right to life. Now, Martha, you asked earlier who's the most best prepared for this job. And I must tell you, with all due respect to all of my friends on the stage, and even to one that's probably looking on, I think unquestionably I am the best prepared, the most tested, the most qualified and proven conservative in this race. I was a leader in the Congress of the United States. I led Indiana where we balanced budgets and had a AAA bond rating when I was governor. And as vice president of the United States, we spent funding to backfill on the military cuts of the Obama administration, and then we were there in the worst pandemic in 100 years. All that being said, I was the first person in this race to say that we've got to deal with the long-term national debt issues. You got people on this stage that won't even talk about issues like Social Security and Medicare. I mean, Vivek, you recently said a president can't do everything. Well, I got news for you, Vivek. I've been in the hallway. I've been in the West Wing. A president of the United States has to confront every crisis facing America. I will put our nation back on the path to growth and prosperity and restore fiscal responsibility, just as I did in Congress and as governor.
Mr. Vice President.
And when I was vice president.
Yeah, so that was obviously Mike Pence. And this is what I mean, like, he sounds like a president. In fact, he sounds like an incumbent president running for re-election, which is a very, very smart move for him. Like, kudos to Nikki and to Mike. Like, they knew where they wanted to come from, and they're doing it. And, you know, I don't really care for Mike Pence, and maybe that's why I think he did well. I see other folks on the Twitter, on the X, saying, yeah, he was boring, he was mean, that sort of thing. I get that, and maybe in this second listen, I'm kind of leaning that way a little bit more. But again, he just sounds good. He knows what he's talking about. It's a well-crafted message, but it doesn't sound canned. And, you know, and again, the other surprise there was he went straight for Vivek there. So I think that's actually a decent play. I mean, when you're that low, you don't want to go after number one. You want to go after number two or number three. For whatever reason, nobody really decided to go after DeSantis. They all went after Vivek, which is a good one, right? He's surging. He's probably going to pass DeSantis in the polls after this. So, you know, why not take some shots at him and see what happens? So I thought that was very well done. Let's see how Vivek responds.
Since you were named earlier, I'm going to get Vivek first.
We'll get to both of
you. This isn't that complicated, guys. Unlock American energy, drill, frack, burn coal, embrace nuclear. Put people back to work by no longer paying them more to stay at home. Reform the U.S. Fed, stabilize the U.S. dollar, and go to war. The only war that I will declare as U.S. president will be the war on the federal administrative state that is the source of those toxic regulations acting like a wet blanket on the economy. So I'm not sure I exactly understood Mike Pence's comment, but I'll let you all parse that out. For me, it's pretty simple. That's something a U.S. president can do with focus, and I'll deliver on
it. Well, let me explain it to you. Let me explain it to you, Vivek, if I can. I'll go slower this time.
I sometimes struggle with the reading comprehension.
Look, I was a House conservative leader before it was cool. I actually pushed a Deficit Reduction Act. That was the last time we actually reduced the national debt in the United States when I was the leader of House conservatives. I balanced budgets and cut taxes when I was governor. I mean, look, Joe Biden has weakened this country at home and abroad. Now is not the time for on-the-job training. We don't need to bring in a rookie. We don't need to bring in people without experience.
So that was a good answer from Vivek. I mean, it was a canned, you know, it sounds like a stump speech. He had it boom, 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 you know, drill and frack and blah, 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 nuclear and that sort of thing. So that was good. But Pence is playing the game pretty darn well. He was able to slide right back in with a response without the hosts controlling who speaks next. Remember, Nikki Haley had attacked Pence, DeSantis, and Tim Scott. So technically, each one of those three should have been given 30 seconds after that. But you see what Pence did? He's taking control of the debate. And so in his 30-second response, he took a shot at Vivek, who then responds and calls him out. And so he gets a chance to respond back. And suddenly, the hosts are not in charge of this, and Mike Pence is like the center of attention. So from a debate game perspective, really smart there. And, you know, I think they come out sort of even there. I think Mike Pence made some good points about Vivek's inexperience and his experience. I think Vivek sort of gave a canned answer. It's a great answer, but it's canned, right? So I think they're kind of even at this point. And you heard everybody going wild after that. So, and in the beginning of Mike Pence's response there at the very beginning, you heard Ron DeSantis try to jump in over top of him. And I think he might have actually gone after Pence and Trump if he'd given been given the opportunity. But let's see what happens next.
When you have a rebuttal, and you are up, Governor DeSantis.
So here's the thing. Why are we in this mess? Part of it, and a major reason, is because how this federal government handled COVID-19 by locking down this economy. It was a mistake. It should have never happened. And in Florida, we led the country out of lockdown. We kept our state free and open. And I can tell you this, as your president, I will never let the deep state bureaucrats lock you down. You don't take somebody like Fauci and coddle him. You bring Fauci in, you sit him down, and you say, Anthony, you are fired.
So they did get to DeSantis there, and, you know, pretty smart move too, right? Doesn't want to get engaged with Pence and Ramaswamy about you know, who's got more experience or a better idea of what to do with this economy. He flipped it to probably his biggest strength, which is his handling of COVID and lockdowns and vaccines in 2020, 2021, et cetera, as compared to what Trump did, right? So without attacking Trump, without sort of patting himself on the back, he opens up this door and says, look, the reason our economy is in shambles is because of the, you know, nationwide lockdowns that happened in many of our states for a year, year and a half. And I would have gotten Fauci fired. I would have fired Fauci, right? So he's drawing a contrast to what President Trump allowed to happen in the, you know, in the early days of COVID and his better record on it, quite frankly. I have some good friends who are doctors and work in pharmaceutical research as well. And even though they're extremely what I would call progressive, they respect Ron DeSantis for his work on COVID and lockdowns and that sort of thing. They understand that he was actually reading the science and making broad-based decisions based upon that, rather than just propping up some 60-year Washington, D.C. bureaucrat who's both caused the pandemic and enriching himself through the vaccines to run things. I do not understand why every person running against Trump does not talk about COVID and Fauci in regards to Trump ad infinitum. And I don't understand why Trump supporters aren't more concerned about how Trump handled that crisis. He was terrible. And it's funny, you know, before COVID happened in 2019, late 2019, even early 2020, I was saying, and I probably said it on this podcast, he's going to win in a landslide. Up until that point, he, you know, his presidency, although mired in all of all of the well-known things, the economy was great. Jobs were great. He was doing some interesting things with China and sort of, you know, confronting them for the first time. And in the Middle East with the Abraham Accords and moving the embassy in Israel to Jerusalem and all those things, like, I think he would have won hands down, like, you know, 60%. But his handling of COVID and what happened not only made people say, I'm not sure I want this guy as president, but also enabled an old guy to sit in his basement like Joe Biden and just run the clock out and win. So interesting tack there with DeSantis, and let's see what happens next.
Respond to Mike for 1 second because he invoked me back. Listen, now that everybody's gotten their memorized pre-prepared slogans out of the way, we can actually have a real discussion now. The reality and the fact of the matter is...
Is that one of yours?
Not really, Mike, actually. Yeah. We're just going to have some fun tonight.
So it's interesting. I don't think the crowd there actually heard what just happened there, which Mike Pence had a great one-liner. And it was off the cuff where Vivek says, okay, now we got all our pre-planned slogans out tonight and we can have a real debate, which seems like a great line. And honestly, I think he could say that about himself too. I think maybe he was a little tongue in cheek, right? But then Pence says, was that one of yours? And so the crowd was cheering right there, and I don't think they heard it, but I thought it was a brilliant comeback. And again, I'm surprised. I kind of think of him as an empty shirt. And, he certainly demonstrated a wit, a quickness of intellect there that I had either never seen or had forgotten.
And the reality is, you have a bunch of people, professional politicians, super PAC puppets, following slogans handed over to them by their 400-page super PACs last week. The real choice we face in this primary is this. Do you want a super PAC puppet, or do you want a patriot who speaks the truth? Do you want incremental reform, which is what you're hearing about, or do you want revolution?
Okay,
and I stand on the side of the American Revolution.
We're going to take control back here.
We need it.
So that was interesting. I did not catch that on first glance, that Vivek was actually attacking Ron DeSantis there. And it has to do with a sort of inside baseball story that came out in the past week where some super PAC had hired some consultants to, do debate prep for Ron DeSantis and tell him how he should approach it, what he should say, and who should attack and blah, blah, blah. And somehow that memo, which was 400 pages long, apparently, got shared with the press. And so one of the process stories last week, which, they're endless now, right? Like the main, at this point in the election, I've seen this over and over again, but, there's usually sort of a target of the media that is having to go through process stories, right? Which means, how's his campaign doing? Is he shaking it up? Why isn't he doing better in the polls? Maybe it's this, maybe it's that. What's Ron DeSantis really going to do? He should be doing better, sort of this handicapping of his campaign so far. And that was one of them. And so Vivek there took a shot at that and called him a super PAC. What did he say? Super PAC. It's super PAC puppets is what he's calling Ron DeSantis. And probably a few others, right? Like, he was looking all across the debate stage as he was saying that. And, that's interesting because DeSantis did not get a chance to respond and it never came back again. So, in some cases, I think this thing went off the rails from a plot and plan perspective, right? Like he was trying to get into it with DeSantis and it just didn't happen. They moved right on after that as if he hadn't said it. I think part of that is certainly because of the way the debate went. But it's really interesting, isn't it?
Has a question for you all.
Polls consistently show that young people's number one issue is climate change. How will you, as both President of the United States and leader of the Republican Party, calm their fears that the Republican Party doesn't care about climate change?
So we want to start on this with a show of hands. Do you believe in human behavior is causing climate change? Raise your hand if you do.
Look, we're not school children. Let's have the debate.
I just got to stop it there, right? Like that was Ron DeSantis and I love that response. And again, I think that's when he's best, especially like interacting with reporters or others who he views as adversaries. But show of hands, let's see who thinks men is causing climate change. And he's like, we're not school children. Let's debate it. And I really like that. That whole show of hands thing at these debates is... it's a farce. It's a gotcha. It's stupid. In fact, later they asked the same question. Raise your hand if you'll support Trump if he's the nominee. And DeSantis is getting killed on the Twitter because he looked around to see who raised their hand before he raised his. And look, like it looks bad, but who cares? Again, it's just such a childish little raise your hand if you're for, tickles. It's just so silly, and I'm really glad that he jumped in there and just, you know, took over.
I'm happy to take it to start. Alexander, so do you want to raise your hand? I don't think that's the way to do it. So let me just say to Alexander this. First of all, one of the reasons our country's decline is because of the way the corporate media treats Republicans versus Democrats. Biden was on the beach while those people were suffering. He was asked about it. He said, no comment. Are you kidding me? As somebody that's handled disasters in Florida, you got to be activated. You've got to be there. You've got to be present. You've got to be helping people who are doing this.
Can we stop?
And here's the deal.
Yeah, let's just answer the question.
So here's, is that a yes? Or is that a yes? Is that a hand raise?
You do not.
I think it was a hand raise for him, and it's my hands are in my pockets.
No, I didn't raise a hand.
Let us be honest as Republicans. I'm the only person on the stage who isn't bought and paid for, so I can say this. The climate change agenda is a hoax. The climate change agenda is a hoax. And we have to declare independence for it. And the reality is, the anti-carbon agenda is the wet blanket on our economy. And so the reality is, more people are dying of bad climate change policies than they are of actual climate change.
Governor Haley,
so that was interesting too, right? So Ron DeSantis did a great job of taking over and getting in a point against Biden, but then he let Vivek just kind of take it from him, right? He just like stripped the football and started running in the opposite direction. And I felt like DeSantis should have pushed back harder on that for the first. And maybe he's been told, like, stop being so pugnacious, stop being a bulldog. But that's what he is. He should be doing it. And then Vivek then takes a shot at everybody and says they're all bought and paid for. And you hear all the rumblings. I couldn't tell who was saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. It might have been Christie, but like, he took a shot at everybody that basically they're compromised. And if you hear the room, that got a bunch of boos. Mostly because all of those candidates have their fans in there. And, you know, you're telling them your candidate is a paid-for charlatan. But I don't think he really got his message across there in a way that people respond to. So I think that was a miss for him.
Are you bought and paid for?
Hold on, hold on.
Listen.
I've had enough. I've had enough already tonight of a guy who sounds like ChatGPT standing up here.
That's great. That's the best line of the night is Vivek Ramaswamy sounds like ChatGPT. He totally does. Like, you could see him being downloaded, you know, ChatGPT downloaded into one of Tesla's robots running for president. So here comes Chris Christie with his Christieisms, right? Like, that was maybe the line of the night. There's one later here that's coming up by Nikki Haley on Vivek, but really, really great commentary there.
Person in one of these debates, Brett, who stood in the middle of the stage and said, what's a skinny guy with an odd last name doing up here, was Barack Obama, and I'm afraid we're dealing with the same type of amateur standing in the stage tonight.
Come on, give me a hug. Give me a hug just like you did to Obama.
Same type of amateur.
And you'll help elect me just like you did to Obama, too. Give me that
the same hug, type of amateur.
Hold on. Hey, Governor Haley, would you like to respond?
Are
you
So you sound like Obama, right, is the attack. I'm not sure that's a great attack, right? Like, people love Obama, even some Republicans. And Vivek was smart to, you know, sort of inside baseball again, right? He pinged Christie back about giving Obama a hug. That was something that happened while Obama was running for re-election. I think it was, I can't remember if it was the hurricane that hit New Jersey or a shooting where Obama came and spoke and he hugged Chris Christie, and it was a big deal because Chris Christie's embracing, you know, the evil Barack Obama. So a little back and forth, a little tit for tat, didn't really score points other than the ChatGPT thing. So yeah, kind of a miss on Christie. I think he could have done better. So then they turn it over to Nikki Haley. Let's hear that.
So, Brett, what I would like to say is the fact that I think this is exactly why Margaret Thatcher said, if you want something said, ask a man. If you want something done, ask a woman.
Bazinga.
First of all, we do care about clean air. clean water. We want to see that taken care of, but there's a right way to do it. And the right way to do it is, first of all, yes, is climate change real? Yes, it is. But if you want to go and really change the environment, then we need to start telling China and India that they have to lower their emissions. That's where our problem is. And these green subsidies that Biden has put in, all he's done is help China, because he doesn't understand all these electric vehicles that he's done, what that does. Half of the batteries for electric vehicles are made in China. And so that's not helping the environment. You're putting money in China's pocket. And Biden did that. So first of all, I think we need to acknowledge the truth, which is these subsidies are not working. We also need to take on the international world and say, okay, India and China, you've got to stop polluting. And that's when we'll start to deal with
Senator Scott, are you?
Nikki Haley does it again. Perfect answer. Flip it right to China. And Biden's policies, man, that was good. And most people don't realize this, that, like she said, half the batteries are made over in China. I don't know the percentage, but an overwhelming amount of these solar panels are made in China. And they're made in coal and gas plants. And there was recently a story, we'll work on it, we'll get it to you, that the IPCC was wrong in the amount of CO2 that is emitted by solar panels, their manufacturer, etc., is three times what the UN thought when they reported on it last. So there's some serious issues with the Green New Deal. And again, these EVs, they're being bought by upper middle class folks, rich folks, and they're getting $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 put in their pocket by the federal government for buying these vehicles. It's just ludicrous. But that's an aside, certainly. So let's keep moving on. I'm probably going to skip forward to a couple more pieces of the debate that I liked or I thought were important, and then wrap this up. We're getting close to an hour here. So here's what's next. Yeah, so actually that was the end of the first half hour, and they went to commercial break, and then they come back to discuss abortion, and they go straight to Nikki Haley. This is the answer I was talking about before. I hope I remembered as well as I think I did, but let's see what she has to say.
The Dobbs decision. In six state referendums, all have upheld abortion rights in this country. And even in red states, there are more swing state referendums that are coming up as we head into the elections as well on this. So, Governor Haley, what do you say to your party and to your state, which today confirmed a six-week abortion law as well, especially the impact on women suburban voters across this country?
Thank you, Martha. I am unapologetically pro-life, not because the Republican Party tells me to be, but because my husband was adopted and I had trouble having both of my children, so I'm surrounded by blessings. Having said that, we need to stop demonizing this issue. This is talking about the fact that unelected justices didn't need to decide something this personal, because it's personal for every woman and man. Now it's been put in the hands of the people. That's great. When it comes to a federal ban, let's be honest with the American people and say it will take 60 Senate votes. It will take a majority of the House. So in order to do that, let's find consensus. Can't we all agree that we should ban late-term abortions? Can't we all agree that we should encourage adoptions? Can't we all agree that doctors and nurses who don't believe in abortion shouldn't have to perform them? Can't we all agree that contraception should be available? And can't we all agree that we are not going to put a woman in jail or give her the death penalty if she gets an abortion? Let's treat this like a respectful issue that it is, and humanize the situation and stop demonizing the situation.
Man, listening to that again, I'm even more impressed. Can't we all agree that A? Can't we all agree that B? Can't we all agree that C? Can't we all agree that D? And they're all reasonable. Like, man, she's doing great. And in fact, listening to this a second time, I think she might be one or two on the stage right now. And she should be really proud of herself. That's a great showing, a great answer. And as I've said before, I think I said it at the beginning of this podcast, but I've certainly said it before, this is the way for the Republicans, okay? I would posit that if they could get abortion off the table as an issue that Democrats can wedge and get out the vote on, they might win national elections by 5%. And the Republicans, I mean, if they can get abortion off the board, if I were the president, if I were a leader of the Republican Party right now, I would be following the example that Nikki Haley just laid out and try and get a national abortion law passed in Congress. That is a compromise. And look, I understand there's a lot of Republicans that believe that life begins at conception. And quite frankly, you got to, you know, you got to call it like it is. They think you're killing babies. And so, you know, that's a serious issue. And it's very difficult to come to consensus on. At the same time, you know, it is a serious issue that needs to be resolved in this country. And you're not going to convince everybody to think what you think. That's it. So you got to do your best. And we need to come to consensus and take this issue off the board for everybody involved. Common sense, real world answers to this very difficult, painful, private issue. And I really like how Nikki's talking about not demonizing women and really being practical about what we can accomplish in the foreseeable future. So great job, Nikki. So there were a few more responses on the abortion question. Nothing really shocking. And then there's a pivot into what we're going to do about our cities. Couple answers, really nothing, no fireworks, nothing interesting. But then Vivek is finishing his answer on cities, and he and Pence get into it again here. Let's listen to some of those fireworks.
Some hard work have all disappeared. What we really need is a tonal reset from the top, saying that this is what it means to be an American. Yes, we will stand for the rule of law. Yes, we will close the southern border where criminals are coming in every day. And yes, we will back law enforcement because we remember who we really are. And that's also how we address that mental health epidemic in the next generation that is directly leading to violent crime.
Can I speak
across this
Governor DeSantis, really here. Quickly. Governor DeSantis.
We don't have an identity crisis, Vivek. We're not looking for a new national identity. The American people are the most faith-filled, freedom-loving, idealistic, hardworking people the world has ever known. We just need government as good as our people.
Well, Mike, I think the difference is you might have, some others like you may have on the stage, it's morning in America speech. It is not morning in America. We live in a dark moment, and we have to confront the fact that we're in an internal, sort of cold cultural civil war.
You are equating the American people with the failed government in Washington, D.C. We just need government as good as our people again.
So let me just finish addressing that slogan, because I don't know what that slogan means. We need to shut down the administrative state. That's actually how we translate it.
Yeah, so a lot of crosstalk there, but interesting that Mike Pence was, again, able to just jump in. Nobody called on him, and he gets into a fray with Vivek. You know, I'm not sure he scored any points. I do like that idea that we need a government that's as good as its people, but I tend to agree with Vivek's take on this. Is like incremental change, like Mike Pence is talking about, it doesn't get there. And so if I'm forced with the choice between those two options, I'm going with Vivek on this one.
Crime, that's actually how we translate.
Crime has been on the rise in Florida, Governor DeSantis. How do you stop crime?
Well, actually, crime's at a 50-year low
in
Florida.
Not
in Miami. We're happy with that. Well, the statewide, it's a 50-year low. And so here's the thing. These hollowed out cities, this is a symptom of America's decline. And one of the biggest reasons is because you have George Soros funding these radical left-wing district attorneys. They get into office and they say they're not going to prosecute crimes they disagree with. The inmates start running the asylum. There's one guy in this entire country that's ever done anything about that. Me. When we had two of these district attorneys in Florida elected with Soros funding who said they wouldn't do their job, I removed them from their posts. They are gone. And as president, we are going to go after all of these people because they are hurting the quality of life and they are victimizing innocent people in every corner of this country. And it will stop when I get into office.
Okay, one more here before we break.
This is this is Ron DeSantis' campaign going forward, in my opinion. Right there, his answer. And, you know, if you sort of get to the meta of it, right, it's like, look, there's this problem and there's seven other people on this stage that talk about this problem. And some of them, like Vivek, talks about it in a way that I wish I could. He's masterful with his words, and he's a great communicator. Me, I just go fix those problems. Right? Go look at my record. I've already fixed this in Florida. Let me go do this in the United States. So you have, and you know, he corrected Brett at the beginning. No, we're at a 50-year low in crime in Florida. And yeah, Miami, it sounds like, is rising. I don't know anything about it, but yeah, you know, again, he's not the mayor of Miami. He's the governor of the state of Florida. So the appropriate data is what's going on in the state of Florida. And again, like, hey, look, you know, Vivek can talk all day about what he's going to do. He's never even run, you know, the dog catching, you know, that old trope, right? Like, he's just talking. And, you know, I'm at the age where I know people by what they do, not what they say. So if you want somebody to help you fix what's wrong in our cities, I'm already doing it in Florida. I fired two DAs that were doing this crap where they're not enforcing certain crimes. They're doing, you know, really low bails. They're not prosecuting hardened criminals. They're putting them back on the street. And I've gotten rid of those folks. So everybody who's a DA in Florida knows you go do your job, you clean up your cities, or else. And so that's really what his campaign should be about, is not what can you say, but what can you do? And who are you going to vote for that you are sure can do these things? That's Ron DeSantis. And that was the second break. So then we're into the next segment here. And the first question is about Trump. And I mentioned this before. It's raise your hand if you will support Trump as the nominee. And it was only one hand went up immediately. That was Vivek. And then, you know, it's sort of like a slow pattern, right? Like one, then one, then one, then one, then one. And DeSantis was towards the back, maybe like the fifth or sixth person to raise his hand. Pence was after him. And then Chris Christie sort of put his finger up and then did a shake with his finger, sort of like a yes, no sort of thing. The only person that absolutely did not raise their hand was Asa Hutchinson. And again, you know, I wrote in the prep yesterday, like his job seemed to be to attack Trump and make a case for him not being president. I didn't ever hear that from him. But here's Chris Christie with, I think, maybe the best case at least in the beginning, an articulate way to describe the issues with another Trump presidency.
Yes, look, I'm doing this.
And
not
I know
this.
You didn't.
Whoa. No, come. What's and the no, look, here's the bottom line. Someone's got to stop normalizing this conduct. Okay? Now, whether or not you believe that the criminal charges are right or wrong, the conduct is beneath the office of President of the United States. And you know, this is the great thing about this country. Booing is allowed, but it doesn't change the truth. It doesn't.
So that's it, right? Like, that's the Christie slogan from now on. Booing is allowed, but it doesn't change the truth. And the truth is this. The conduct is below the office of the President of the United States. Period. It is. And anyone that would argue with that or think that's not true is I think just an ideologue, right? Like, they're just a Trump person, regardless of the facts. And look, I get it. I understand the emotion involved. And you know, he was there for people in a time when they felt like nobody else was. And so I get the dedication. They feel like he's been there for them. But yeah, the conduct is ridiculous. And, you know, we just don't need it. We just don't need it in our discourse. We just don't need a target like that for the next 4 years as president. You know, the best thing for the country, which is what this endeavor is all about, is to move on from both President Trump and President Biden. That's the cold, honest truth. And I really appreciate Chris Christie for saying that and quite honestly putting his neck out here. I'm sure he thinks, you know, somewhere in the back of his mind that he might be president. He's not, right? He's out there to stop Trump. And, you know, if that's really the case, if that's what he ends up doing, well, God bless him for it. So then Christie and Vivek went back and forth a little bit, and it really didn't. Neither one of them shined. They were talking over each other, and it kind of got old. And certainly Christie got a lot of boost, too. So we're just going to skip that. But the next question is, and this one was really surprising, too, and I'd forgotten about it in the summary, but this is an important one, too. They asked, basically, hey, look, Mike Pence is on the stage. And, you know, he obviously certified the election on January 6th. There's a big part of MAGA and Trump supporters that are angry at him. He's even gotten death threats, etc., because he did that. Do you all support what he did on January 6th? And I was quite surprised that nobody, that everybody supported him. You know, everybody said, yeah, he did the right thing. And I really did expect somebody like Vivek, maybe even DeSantis, to sort of, you know, do a diatribe about all the problems with the election that year. And we can get into those at some other point. I'm sure we've done it before, and, you know, it's old and tired. And in fact, there's a great answer, I think, from DeSantis coming up next.
Mike Pence did the right thing on January 6th.
So here's what we need to do. We need to end the weaponization of these federal agents.
But that's not the question.
That's not the question.
I know, but here's the thing.
You can answer the
question. This election is not about January 6th of 2021. It's about January 20th of 2025, when the next president is going to take office. I know what the Democrats would like to do. They want to talk about all these other issues, but we've got to focus on your future. We've got to focus on reversing the decline of our country.
Right, right.
I learned in the military, I was assigned with U.S. Navy SEALs in Iraq, that you focus on the mission above all else. You can't get distracted. So Republicans, we've got to look forward, and we've got to make sure that we're bringing the message that can win in November 2024.
Yeah, that's the answer, right? Like, look, did he do? And I think right after this, actually, I want to play just a little bit more of this because I think they try and hammer him or pin him down here. Hang on.
Support and defend the Constitution of the United States. I think the American people deserve to know whether everyone on this stage agrees that I kept my oath to the Constitution that day. There's no more important duty.
So
answer the question.
I've answered this before.
So yes.
No, why are we? Mike did his duty. I got no beef with him. But here's the thing: is this what we're going to be focusing on?
I'm relieved.
Going forward, the rehashing of this. I'll tell you,
Governor DeSantis,
the Democrats would love that, and they will win if we let them get away with it.
Yeah, so we're gonna, Biden can't stay in the basement, and we're going to hold him accountable. That's the answer, right? And I think it's really smart to try and pivot and move on, right? Elections are about the future. They're not about the past. And, you know, he's got to toe the line there and make this about the future. If it's all about Trump and January 6th and the indictments, he's right. Like, the Democrats win, whether they win the election, they are winning the battle of the media and moving people in their direction. So, to the extent that he can impact what we're talking about, he's doing the right thing. So, we're going to keep moving. And you know, the next set of questions was about pardoning Trump. I think they spent way too much time on Trump, quite honestly. I get it. You know, he's the front runner, but he's not there. So then they move on to Ukraine. And, you know, I was pretty surprised. They did one more show of hands answer. And the only person that put his hand up and said, I'm going to stop this silly funding of a proxy war in Russia in a border dispute when we have so many problems and issues with our at home, including with borders and with debt and with what we're spending our money on. It's ludicrous. And there was only one person that raises his or her hand and said, I'm going to stop this. And that was Vivek. DeSantis kind of gave a half-sy answer like Europe needs to pull their weight and then we can support it. He had said in the past, I really liked it, that it's just a border dispute. But you can see what's happening here. The entire, there's eight people standing up there, and seven of them say they're basically got the Joe Biden policy on Ukraine, which is a travesty. This has to end. And whichever one of them comes out and changes their mind, I'm going to be supportive of. So the interesting thing, though, is what happens next with Vivek and Nikki Haley.
You would not support an increase of funding to Ukraine.
I would not. And I think that this is disastrous, that we are protecting against an invasion across somebody else's border when we should use those same military resources to prevent across the invasion of our own southern border here in the United States of America. We are driving Russia further into China's hands. The Russia-China alliance is the single greatest threat we face. And I find it offensive that we have professional politicians on the stage that will make a pilgrimage to Kyiv, to their Pope, Zelensky, without doing the same thing for people in Maui or the south side of Chicago or Kensington. I think that we have to put the interests of Americans first. Secure our own border instead of somebody else's.
He was referring.
And the reality is, this is also how we project strength by making America strong at home.
Thank you.
I agree with Vivek 100%. The fact that Chris Christie and Mike Pence have gone to see Zelensky and get that photo op, I find it disqualifying. It's such a farce. We did another podcast, the one before this, number 12, talked a bit about Ukraine. There's more to talk about, but I'm just not going to listen, nor am I going to play for you reasons why Chris Christie and Mike Pence think that they should go see Zelensky and send him $100 billion. This former comedian who won an election saying he would make peace with Russia and was involved in the Biden family business scandal, whereby it looks like $10 million at least went from Burisma into the Biden's pockets so they could stop the corruption investigations. That was before Zelensky, but certainly Zelensky has the goods on that, and that may be why we're actually in this war. So Ukraine, the government of Ukraine is not good. They are not free. They postponed elections. They've closed news and like TV stations and papers that are pro-Russia. So there's no free press. There's no free speech. They're not holding elections. They're not good guys. They have a battalion full of Nazis that are fighting on their side. And so a lot of what the American people have been told about Zelensky and the Ukraine is wrong. And, folks like these guys, these captured deep state guys, Christie and Pence, I just don't want to hear about it. So I'm not going to play any of that. And so next they go to Governor Haley, and I think people will think this is the top of her night and maybe the lowest point for Vivek. She does a really good rhetorical debate. I'll let you listen to it, and then I want to comment after.
Support more funding for the Ukraine war. You have said of Governor DeSantis that you didn't appreciate it when he initially called it a territorial dispute. Why?
First of all, the American president needs to have moral clarity. They need to know the difference between right and wrong. They need to know the difference between good and evil. Right. When you look at the situation with Russia and Ukraine, here you have a pro-American country that was invaded by a thug. So when you want to talk about what has been given to Ukraine, less than 3.5% of our defense budget has been given to Ukraine. If you look at the percentages per GDP, 11 of the European countries have given more than the US. But what's really important is go back to when China and Russia held hands, shook hands before the Olympics, and named themselves unlimited partners.
Okay, the first bit was great, right? A president should yada, yada, yada. Really, really smart, really good approach to this answer. I take issue with the data points and why it's not a big deal. 3.5% of our defense budget, right? That's a lot of jack. 3%, it's a lot of money, and just like trying to play a percentage game with it is just disingenuous. And then the percentage of GDP of European countries, European countries should be paying 100% of whatever Ukraine needs. This is a European issue. It has little to nothing to do with the American people. And to say, oh, well, they paid a higher percent. Yeah, what, Liechtenstein's percentage of GDP? It's just, you know, whenever somebody shares with you a stat and it's just the percentage and not the number or vice versa, be wary. They're trying to fool you. And those are just little tricks and numbers to try and make you feel like it's not a big deal. It is a huge deal, and Europe should be paying for it. Period. End of discussion.
Win for Russia is a win for China. We have to know that. Ukraine is the first line of defense for us. And the problem that Vivek doesn't understand is he wants to hand Ukraine to Russia. He wants to let China eat Taiwan. He wants to go and stop funding Israel. You don't do that to friends. What you do instead is you have the backs of your friends. Ukraine is a front line of defense. Putin has said, once Russia takes Ukraine, Poland and the Baltics are next. That's a world war. We're trying to prevent war. Look at what Putin did today. He killed Prigozhin. When I was at the UN, the Russian ambassador suddenly died. This guy is a murderer, and you are choosing a murderer over a pro-American country.
Mr. Ramaswamy, you have 30 seconds. Mr. DeSantis,
you know, Nick, I wish you well in your future career on the boards of Lockheed and Raytheon.
You know,
well, that's the other important point here is that, you know, all that money, at least the military spending for Ukraine, is not going to Ukraine. It's going to Lockheed Martin and Boeing and those guys, right? They're buying bullets and shells and missiles and whatever else we're sending to them from those guys and sending that equipment, those expendable items to the Ukraine, never to be seen again. Remember the $8 billion worth of equipment that was left in Afghanistan? Well, we paid for that. We paid for it, and we paid it to Lockheed Martin and those guys. So, like, that's a really good point by Vivek, but watch Haley come back swinging here.
Fact of the matter, and you know,
Boeing came off of it, but you've been pushing this lie. You've been pushing this lie all week, Nikki.
You want to go and defund Israel? You want to
get Taiwan to China? Okay, let me address that. I'm glad you brought that up.
You want to go and give
Ukraine
Russia?
I'm going to address each of those right now. This is the false lies of a professional politician.
Under your watch, you will make America less safe. You have no foreign policy experience, and it shows.
And you know what?
It shows.
So that was a huge applause line for Nikki Haley, and good for her, right? She's doing a great job in this debate, and I think she did a great job in this debate. Vivek will come back and say, and I saw him after the debate as well, say something similar, which is, listen, if you want experience, if you want the same old regime change, never-ending, no strategy wars, never-ending wars, we've been at war in this country for, you know, 25 years, and we just keep going, right? If you want that, that's why you vote for somebody with experience in foreign policy. Elect Nikki Haley. If you don't like that, if you think that America should be built on peace and maintaining peace and prosperity across the globe and not enriching rich men north of Richmond that make weapons of war, then vote for me. And I think that's a really winning message. Again, I think Nikki scored some points, you know, debate game tactically, but at the end of the day, it's a losing message and no different than Joe Biden's. And then they subsequently flipped that question to DeSantis, who gave a pretty good answer, which was, you know, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. I'm going to send troops to the border. Let's talk about that border. And why are we sending all this money when, you know, we have a serious issue at our own border? And I'm not going to send troops to Ukraine. I'm going to send them to our southern border. So, you know, they then flipped to China. There's a number of other things that happen. But I think we're going to end there. So let's just talk about what we think happened there at the end of the day. Yeah, so it was an interesting debate. And it's funny, like, whenever you listen to it a second time, you sort of get different impressions. As I told you at the top, at the beginning, I thought Mike Pence and Nikki Haley did wonderful. Ron DeSantis did okay. And Vivek probably got a lot of eyeballs and a lot of attention because a lot of people had not met him yet. Having watched it the second time, I think Nikki Haley did wonderful. And I think she'll move up more than anyone else in the polls. And I think Ron DeSantis actually did better than I thought the first time. I thought he had some good thoughts. across a number of issues. He certainly didn't have one of those great moments. That went to Nikki Haley, maybe a little Mike Pence, maybe a little Ramaswamy, but I just don't see much blood coming out of this. I thought it was a good debate. We covered the issues, but there was no big delta. And that means the winner of last night's debate is Donald Trump. Well, this has been The Country, our first Republican primary debate analysis of 2023. My name's Justin Weller. Please catch us on the Twitter, the X, at JW The Country, online at www.thecountry.news, and we'll see you next time. Happy birthday, pancakes. See ya.